Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good day. John Wadsworth talking to you live from an undisclosed location in Pearl River, Louisiana. I hope your day is as wonderful as mine is. A wonderful day that the Lord has made. And let us rejoice in it. Well, we're going to cover Genesis chapter 1, verses 31, through Genesis chapter 2, verses 4a, the first part of Genesis 2, 4. So, let's begin. And God saw everything that he had made, and beheld, and behold, it was very good. And the evening and the morning were the sixth day. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. And on the seventh day, God ended his work, which he had made, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work he had made. And God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because that in it he had rested from all his work which God created and made. These are the generations of the heavens and of the earth when they were created. God had now completed his work, but before settling down to rest in contemplation of what he had produced, as it were, he first surveyed it all and pronounced the whole creation to be very good. Six times before, he had seen that what he had made was good. But now that it was complete, with every part in perfect harmony with every other part, all perfectly formed with an abundance of inhabitants, he saw with great joy that it was all, literally, exceedingly good. On each previous day, the account had concluded by saying, literally, the evening and the morning were a fifth day, and so on. But now it says, the evening and the morning were the sixth day. The definite article occurring for the first time in this formula, thus also stressing completion of the work. This one verse is itself sufficient to refute any theory which tries to accommodate the geological age concept in the Genesis record creation. Everything in the universe, the next verse specifically includes all the host of heaven in its scope, was still at this time exceedingly good in God's own omniscient judgment. There could have been nothing that was not good in all creation. No struggle for existence, no disease, no pollution, no physical calamities like earthquakes, floods, etc. No imbalance of lack of harmony, no disorder, no sin, and above all, no death. Even Satan was still good at this point. His rebellion and fall must have come later. Fossils, of course, speak of death, often of violent and sudden death. They also speak of disease and injuries, of storms and convulsions. In short, of a world like the present world, the whole creation groaneth and travaileth in pain together, Romans 8:22. Since death only entered into the world when sin came in through man, Romans 5:12, and since the whole creation was very good before man sinned, it is as obvious as anything could be that the fossil record now found in the sedimentary rocks of the Earth's crust could only have been formed sometime after man sinned. The fossils could not have been deposited either before the 6 days of creation, as in the gap theory, or during the 6 days of creation, as according to the progressive creation day-age type of theory.
How could God have possibly looked upon a world of struggle and travail and looked into the rocks to see the remains of billions of dead animals, as well as human-like creatures, and then describe it all as exceedingly good? Such a suggestion, in effect, makes God out to be a monster, not the God of all grace, who cares for every sparrow, not the God of love and mercy, therefore too kind to create a world by such a process as suggested in the geological age concept. The God of perfect wisdom, therefore certainly able to devise a better way than that. The God of omnipotence, thus fully able to create by such a better way, and the God of infinite order, not the author of confusion and of wasteful inefficiency, which is implied if the fossil record is indeed a record of pre-human Earth history, as revealed in the Bible. As we will see later, the cataclysmic events of the Great Flood in the days of Noah are quite sufficient to account for all the phenomena of the sedimentary rocks and the fossil record. At the time of man's creation, however, the whole universe was a beautiful, perfect creation, the finest that the mind and heart of God himself could devise for man. This verse concludes the first chapter of Genesis, but, as we have noted earlier, the first chapter should really not have been marked at this point, but in the middle of verse 4 of Genesis 2. It is there that the first toldoth, that's T-O-L-E-D-O-T-H, subscript appears. That's Hebrew subscript. These are the generations of the heavens and the earth when they were created. It is likely, as discussed previously, that the statement represents the subscript of Signer, as it were, of the author of the section that has gone before. In this case, since there was no human author, no man having been present to observe the creation, no human name is attached, as in the case of the other 10 toldoths that occur later in Genesis. The account tells about not the genealogical and historical records of such patriarch, but about the genealogy of the universe itself. The passage in Genesis chapter 2, verses 1 through 3, is, of course, a marvelous assertive summary that God had now completed his work of creating and making all things. Four times it is emphasized that God had finished his work, and three times it is emphasized that this included all his work. Take a little sip of water. These points are stressed because it is vitally important for man to realize that the present processes of the cosmos are not the processes of creating and making. And therefore, it would forever be impossible for him to understand about the origin of things apart from divine revelation. But the ancient pagan evolutionist and the modern scientific evolutionist continue over and over to repeat this same folly, trying to explain the origin and basic meaning of things in terms of self-contained, closed universe, an attempt which is absurdly impossible. The present processes of the universe are, without exception, processes of conservation and disintegration, as formulated in the two universal laws of thermodynamics. The processes of the creation period, on the other hand, were processes of innovation and integration. Or creating and making, which are exactly opposite. Science can deal only with present processes to which alone it has access. It should be completely clear to all who are not willfully ignorant that the universal processes of conservation and disintegration could never produce a universe requiring almost infinite processes of innovation and integration for its production. Therefore, if we really want to know anything about this creation period, other than the fact that there must have been such a period to produce the universe, a fact certainly required by the implications of the two laws of thermodynamics, then such knowledge can be acquired only by divine revelation. And that is exactly what we have here in this marvelous first chapter of Genesis. The divinely revealed record of the creation and formation of all things. How long it took. What the various events and divisions were. What the order of development was. The relations of the various components. And all the other data which man could never be able to determine for himself through his own scientific observations. This completion of God's work of creation is also stressed in the New Testament. In Hebrews chapter 4, verses 3, verse 4, and verse 10. Hebrews 11, 3. Ephesians 3, 9, etc. The hosts of heaven mentioned in Genesis 2, 1 refers primarily to the stars. Deuteronomy 4:19, Nehemiah 9:6, Jeremiah 33:22, etc. But may well refer also to the angels. 1 Kings 22:19, 2 Chronicles 18:18, Luke 2:13, etc. Whose sphere of residence and reference may possibly be the stars. The fact that the seventh day is not formally summarized, as are other 6 days in the end of each day, certainly does not mean that the seventh day is still continuing, as some day-age advocates have suggested. The scripture does not say he is resting on the seventh day, but rather, he rested on the seventh day. He rested, past tense, on the seventh day. Exodus 31:17 even says that on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed. Though his work of creation was finished, he very soon had to undertake the work the great work of redemption. John chapter 4, verse 34, John chapter 5, verse 17, etc. Finally, even that work was finished, John 17, 4, when the Son of God, the Redeemer, on the cross shouted the mighty cry of victory, "It is finished." Then once again, God rested on the Sabbath day in Joseph's tomb until the dawning of the first day of the new week and new age. God bless you. My name is John Wadsworth. We will continue with the next chapter, Creation of Man, Chapter 4. And if you have any questions, comments, please to my email, which is wsm217@gmail.com. Have a wonderful, godly day.